Welcome to the South Elkhorn Christian Church Sermon Podcast. We hope you enjoy the weekly messages. For bulletin material, reflection guides, and other resources, visit southelkhorncc.org. I have some favorite hymns, some songs of the church that I grew up with or discovered later in life, and they just speak to my soul. And even though I'm not the best singer in the world, I will sing them at the top of my lungs. Songs, hymns like "Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee," "How Great Thou Art, All Creatures of Our God and King, I Was There to Hear Your Morning Cry." Songs that I love. Now, there are two other songs that have filtered to the top of that list for me. Two songs that mean a lot to me. "Be Thou My Vision" and "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing." A song we're going to sing later in the service today. A song we're going to sing, and if you know the words to that song, if you know the lyrics to that song, you might have noticed that the sermon series is inspired by that song. Indeed, the title for this sermon series during the season of Lent, "Wandering Heart," touches on some of those lyrics. "Prone to wander, take my heart, Lord, and seal it." And each sermon during this sermon series is also inspired by lyrics from that song. This Sunday's message, Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God. One of the ways we can understand Lent is as an opportunity to, in the words of "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing," tune our hearts to sing thy grace, to sing the grace of God, to sing with the grace and the new life and the mercy and the forgiveness and the transformation of God. The season of Lent is meant to be a season of introspection, of preparation, of self-examination, of perhaps trying on new practices, spiritual practices, spiritual ideas that help us embrace the mystery, joy, and beauty of new life that we celebrate on Easter. It can also be a season of letting go. Letting go all those things that keep our hearts from being fully tuned to the heart of God. A season of letting go of attachments and distractions. Of trying something new by letting something else that we often do go. The season of Lent is a beautiful, beautiful time. It's become one that's very precious to me. I didn't grow up celebrating Lent. And if any of you are like me and didn't grow up celebrating Lent or practicing Lent or embracing what the season of Lent can be and mean, we have in the foyer and online at southelkhorncc.org/Lent, there are resources there to learn about Lent, to learn about ideas and ways to practice Lent. You can also find devotionals, devotional cards, poetry, a whole host of things in the foyer online as a way of embracing this season, which is an invitation to tune our hearts. The other thing that's going on during this sermon series and during the season of Lent is following the story of Peter as Peter engages and is challenged by and struggles with and attempts to embrace who Jesus is. We're starting this morning looking at the call story of Peter as depicted in the Gospel of Luke. And we'll be following the ups, the downs, the wandering heart of Peter as Peter seeks to figure out what this whole following Jesus thing is all about and really means. When people come to join the church at South Elkhorn, one of the questions we ask, the only question we ask is this: do you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and do you promise to spend the rest of your days figuring out what that means? Because the truth is, we have a whole lifetime of discovery ahead of us as people of faith. And as we'll see in the story of Peter, Peter has a whole lifetime of discovery, even as he journeyed in the physical presence of Jesus. Peter had something to learn, and so do we. And what a beautiful gift it is this season of Lent that we get to learn alongside Peter, that we get to embrace the gifts of God's presence to prepare us for new life that Lent is all about. So let's begin in Luke chapter 5. We're going to be reading verses 1 through 11 in this beautiful and bewildering story of Jesus and the Sea of Galilee and fish and disciples. Once, while Jesus was standing beside the lake of Gennesaret, and the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he saw two boats there at the shore of the lake. The fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats. I love his audacity. Just got into one of the boats. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little way from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Why don't you just put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch?" Simon answered, "Master, we have worked all night long, but have caught nothing. But if you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees saying, "Go away from me. Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." For he and all who were with him were amazed at the catch of fish they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people." When they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed him. The word of God for the people of God. During my college years, I worked each summer at a camp and conference center that had a lake. It had a lake, and part of the summer staff's job and responsibilities was to be lifeguards during the swim time. And this lake didn't just have a swim area, it also had a whole bunch of swim toys. There was a tower where you could grab onto a trapeze and swing out into the water. There was a zip line. There was a floating trampoline. There was a two-story inflatable iceberg that you could climb to the top of and slide down. There was a blob that you jumped onto and catapulted people up into the air, and hopefully they didn't land on their bellies. It was a lot of fun. But in order to use all this equipment and to make sure that swim time was safe, whenever campers would come, the very first day, they would have to do a swim test to ensure that those who were going to go out into the deeper water were capable of swimming. Even with life jackets on, everyone had to wear life jackets, still there was a swim test. And what you did for the swim test, you walked out onto the dock, and then you jumped into the water, and you swam from one dock to the other, and the summer staff would be in the water with you with our cool lifeguard shorts and lifeguard floaty things so we didn't get too tired, and we would be with you stroke for stroke to the end. Now, of course, a lake has muddy water. The bottom was often very muddy, and this was not a clear lake. You couldn't see to the bottom of this lake. It didn't take very long for the lake to be difficult to see the bottom or impossible. I remember that one swim test, I walked out onto the dock with this little girl who looked at me and said, "How deep is it?" And I said, "It's really not that deep. I know you can't see the bottom right here, but it's really not that deep. You're going to be okay." She said, "Yeah, but how deep is it?" And I said, okay. So I jumped into the water, and I put my feet on the ground, and I said, "It's this deep." And she goes, "That's deep enough." She jumped into the water. I swam beside her. She made it to the end. She was so proud of herself. And I said, "Yeah, it was deep enough, but you did it. You made it." And she said, "Yeah, it was deep enough." How deep was the water that Jesus invited the disciples, that invited Peter to let down his nets into? Not sure, but deep enough. That phrase, deep water, that should alert us. Deep water is not just an indicator of depth in terms of distance from the top of the water to the seafloor. No, that word deep water is meant to signal something so much more. I know we've gone back to this time and time again recently, but go back to Genesis chapter 1. When God is creating the heavens and the earth, and the Spirit of God is hovering over what? The waters of the deep waters, the primordial chaos, the churning of what is in an unpredictable and unformed and unstructured way. So when Jesus says, put your nets out into deep water, we're supposed to hear more than water where you might normally fish. We're supposed to hear, trust me in the chaos, in the uncertainty, in whatever might be next. Trust me, try again. And Peter does. Lets down his net into the water. I love, as Pastor Holly shared with the children, you can almost see Peter just, Simon Peter, just rolling his eyes. Oh my God, we've been doing this over and over and over again. We already know this sea. We know this lake. We know how it works, and there's no fish to be caught. And Jesus says, yep, trust me. Go into the chaos and try again. Now, if we're careful readers and we're paying attention, we see this is more than just a moment about catching fish. This is a moment about what it means to be a part of the ministry of Jesus. This is about what it means to trust and follow God. This is about what it means to be a person of faith. This, to be a person of faith, to follow in the way of Jesus, to be about what Jesus is about entering into chaos and things that are uncertain. What a beautiful metaphor for what it means to enter the season of Lent. To bracket what we think we know about God and about one another and even about ourselves, and to enter into the deep waters where we have to learn to trust that God will meet us there. That God will meet us if we're willing to let down our nets into the chaos of our own soul, into the chaos of our world, into the chaos of our communities and relationships. What does it mean to let down your net and trust, even though we've done this a million times before, that maybe this time something else might take place? Deep water. How deep is it? Deep enough. Deep enough that you're going to have to trust that maybe, just maybe, something different can take place this time if you're with Jesus. If you trust that Jesus is with you. I love that in this moment, in this calm moment, when Peter is surprised by this incredible catch of fish, and the boat is so full that it is possibly going to sink, and we have this moment where Jesus says to Peter, I presume, because Peter does, go and follow him, but come and follow me. I love that in this depiction in Luke's gospel, I love that there is provision enough for what is left behind. In other stories, in other gospel accounts of the first call, there's this kind of random encounter where Jesus kind of shows up and says, hey, come follow me. And the disciples are like, yeah, sure, whatever. Let's throw caution to the wind. And they go and perhaps leave behind families who depended on them and their livelihood. I love that in this story, we catch a little bit of a different glimpse, that there's this abundance that Jesus, in an indirect way, is taking care of the disciples and perhaps those who depended on them in this invitation to come and follow him. That following Jesus isn't about sacrificing to the point of hurting the people we love, but it is about healing ourselves and being a part of a healing that impacts the people we love. I love that in this moment we catch a glimpse that maybe, just maybe, this abundant catch was part of a provision that would help this transition when Peter and James and John and those disciples begin to follow Jesus, leave their livelihoods and their lives behind and begin to follow Jesus. In the depiction of this story in The Chosen, this series of shows about the life of Jesus, the interpretation that is given, which I think is beautiful, is that Peter's in a lot of debt, and that actually this amazing catch is used by Peter to pay off his debt, that Jesus cares about the baggage that Peter has, that the disciples have, and that following in the way of Jesus is not about hurting ourselves or hurting others. It's about healing ourselves, our relationship with God, and learning to better care for the people we love. There's a lot going on in this beautiful and brief story. I'm also mindful of the fact that one of the first things that Peter does when this abundant, amazing miracle happens, this miracle catch and this provision that could change his life happens, what's the first thing he does? He says, I'm not worthy. He says, no, Jesus, depart from me. Get away from me. I'm not worthy of this. Sadly, so much about our spiritual experience and our church life sometimes is pounding the message that we're not worthy into us to the point that when something beautiful happens, we have difficulty accepting it. We're embarrassed. We feel guilty or ashamed. And the first reaction we have to this amazing, abundant thing that has come before us, this opportunity is, oh, no, 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 no. And we resist. Have you ever had a gift fall in your lap and you just thought, no, I can't accept this? I love what Jesus does with Peter when he falls before him and perhaps has his eyes down on the ground and says, no, I'm not worthy. I'd like to imagine that Jesus gets down on eye level with him and tilts his chin up and says, don't be afraid. This isn't about whether or not you're worthy. This is about what you will do with the gift. What you will do with this opportunity. Will you receive it and embrace it and learn to live into it? Don't reject it. This isn't about whether you're worthy. This is about the goodness of God that shows up when you're willing to trust in the chaos of deep waters. Jesus tells Peter, don't be afraid. You who have made your livelihood in catching fish, you're going to catch people. Catch people. Now maybe that's not the metaphor we want to lean into with church and snaring people into the life of God. That's probably not what we want to do. And yet, I think there's something beautiful about this emphasis that Jesus places before Peter, that what is the ministry and mission of Jesus all about? It's not about ideas and confessions, dogmas and doctrines. It's not about buildings and places. What's it about? It's about people. And the language of catching and snaring in nets may not be the one we want to lead with as people of faith. Nevertheless, I think that what we see time and time and time again in the way that Jesus lives and ministers, heals, teaches, and feeds is Jesus is about love. And if you want to catch someone's attention, love them. If you want to help people step into new life and heal, love. If you want to make a difference in the world, risk a world-sized compassion. When it comes to catching people, what the church is meant to be all about, what Peter was called into, what the other disciples were called into, what we are called into as people of faith is a life that is so full of love and compassion, kindness and grace and mercy that people say, I want to be a part of that. I see healing happening. I see new life emerging. There's so much in this beautiful invitation into the season of Lent, into the adventure of discipleship, into the meaning of faith. If we're going to follow in the way of Jesus, it means we're going to have to set out into some deep and chaotic waters. If we're going to follow in the way of Jesus, it means we're going to have to be about people. If we're going to follow in the way of Jesus, we're going to trust that it's not about working so hard and being so sacrificial that it ends up hurting people. It's about healing people. If we're going to follow in the way of Jesus, we're going to have to be about what Jesus is about, which was loving people so radically and fully and inclusively that things couldn't stay the same. What do you do with a gift that is so beautiful and maybe absurd and unpredictable that you might first want to resist? The invitation of Lent is to embrace the gift. Embrace it with gratitude, to do something with it. Terence Lester had an absurd moment of a gift that he wasn't expecting. He had grown up and run away from home. He'd gotten involved in gang activity and got in trouble with the law and found himself at 20 years old about to enter the courtroom where he would be sentenced. And he watched as others were sentenced and drug away, and he stepped into the courtroom, and the judge in rural Georgia did something strange and just said, "I don't know why I'm doing this, but you're getting a second chance." And Terrence Lester, who had already begun to think about his life and how he wanted it to be different, had this gift plopped into his lap. And a beautiful, beautiful little glimpse into what happens when our justice system leans towards rehabilitation and restoration instead of punishment. And so he went back home, moved in with his mom, began to write the pain of his experience, the pain of his childhood, into poetry and spoken word that others begin to observe and acknowledge had just tremendous depth. He got invited to church, showed up at church, and someone began to mentor him. And his life slowly, subtly began to change, and he realized that he was passionate about helping others. He was passionate about helping those who perhaps were at the easily ignored and overlooked at the bottom of society, and he devoted himself to helping the unhoused. And so he began to work and develop ideas. And then COVID-19 happened, this pandemic happened, and he noticed something. He noticed that the unhoused, who didn't have a lot of opportunity for hygiene, no longer had places where they could go simply to wash their hands, to have even the basic hygiene that might prevent COVID-19 from spreading among their community. And so we had this wild and crazy idea to get sinks with water and put them in the middle of the unhoused community places where they would gather. And so we did. And it was so successful and so amazing, this initiative called Love Sinks In, that it's not only in Atlanta, Georgia, where Terrence Lester is, it's now in 25 other cities. He's continued to advocate for the dignity and well-being of the unhoused community. What do you do with a gift, an absurd gift that falls in your lap? Do you say, "No, I'm not worthy, I can't do it, I don't deserve it"? Or do you hear Jesus lifting up your face to say, "This is a gift for you. Trust me, even in the deep waters, to do something new"? This morning, I don't know what opportunities might befall you this day, this season. But as we enter into the season of Lent, be alert. Be mindful. Be mindful when an opportunity comes across your lap, perhaps the opportunity to practice Lent, or an opportunity you can't possibly fathom or anticipate. Be mindful that perhaps this is the moment when Jesus is inviting you to come. Follow me.
Thanks for listening to the message this week. Visit southelkhorncc.org, where you can download reflection and discussion guides to dig deeper into the weekly scripture and message.